come in and sit with us. We're four friends, talking, thinking, and laughing. We take on the absurd and the profound, sometimes both at once.
And we speak about aging because, oh, yes, we're living it, feeling it in our bones. First time for all of us.
And we don't plan to go quiet. We prod, we tease, we wander down strange roads. A story here, an argument there, a joke, maybe a truth.
Dylan Thomas said it best, "Do not go gentle into that good night." We won't. We'll burn, we'll rage, we'll keep moving. We'll take care of each other as we go.
Hi, welcome to Seniors in the Building. I'm Signe.
I'm Jack.
I'm Elaine.
And I'm Rick.
Later life is a special period of development with unique limitations and opportunities, and it may be the most important phase of our life. You can change a lot in later life if you really want to. For some, it's a troublesome string of transitions, nothing less than a shattering of the things we took for granted. It might be hard to age well. Old age can be regarded as an age of opportunities for inner growth. What's to stop us from enhancing the quality of our lives by achieving greater awareness, emotional depth, and self-respect while balancing opposing poles in life? These words come to us from the wisdom of Maury. The writer seems to believe that if we make certain choices, we will age well. Some of us have difficulty fitting into either of these realms of thought. Aging well is not necessarily about choices, and we wondered if perhaps this comes from the fact that we are raised with a binary mindset, and now we are applying it to aging. You know, hot or cold, complex or simple, good and evil, male or female, enthusiasm and despair, security and insecurity, feeling my age and feeling ageous, etc. Life is more complex than that, as we found in our own life experiences. Human life is messy. Are we willing to learn beyond a binary mindset? Is there somewhere on the continuum that allows us to live with the losses and challenges, joys and enrichments, and live through this special period of development called later life, and balance between our energetic, hopeful life force and our enervating or overwhelming despair force? Let's find out.
Sounds challenging. To me, the question is, can you even learn positively or learn productively or successfully when you're older? Or do we just sort of repeat and fall back into what we've learned before?
That's interesting, because that requires unlearning. And I think that's part of what is in that whole introduction, Elaine, is unlearning the things that we learned in order to see things differently or learn something new. Mm-hmm. The whole binary thing, when we grow up with black and white, or you know, all of that. When we come to later life, we, at least I feel like things are more on a continuum than black or white. And it's sometimes when you've got those fixed ideas about things like gender or things like, I don't know, politics, mm-hmm. which can be very binary. It starts to be challenging to find what's true for you in what's out there.
And because we have this normative sort of understanding of who we are, we somehow can't go into the gray matter without somebody being anxious about us, or you know, or finding our behavior, you know, inexcusable or unapproachable or whatever. And I have this feeling sometimes, like, if I'm not black or white thinking, that we don't belong in this normal kind of status in society. That somehow I'd like to live in the gray part of that, right?
Or that I don't fit in the one camp or the other, and then that puts me in the gray, and then that's kind of a weird place to be. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I find myself torn continuously between two tensions. One is wanting to seek serenity in old age. And the other is to be vital and active in opposition to the challenges that we, I think we all see, face not just us, but the world. Mm-hmm. And that tension between wanting to retreat and wanting to engage politically, since we're no longer affiliated institutionally, we have the freedom to engage politically. Not that it wasn't there, but it wasn't there entirely, having been in Alberta and worked there for years. Mm-hmm. There was always a tension between being too political and therefore changing negatively the image of the institution, for example, by becoming radically outspoken.
Or impacting our employment.
Oh, yeah.
Our financial stability at home, right?
Bottom line, yeah.
Bottom line kind of.
So now we have that freedom, I think. But seeking serenity may not necessarily, now I'm thinking out loud here, mean disengagement. Mm-hmm. It may mean the capacity to even, like that in the Buddhist tradition, for example, the contemplative practice gives you the opportunity to see things as they are, theoretically, right? And also gives you the energy to engage, ideally, in opposition to the horrific horrors that the world faces today.
And so some of that goes back to this idea of, do we have the energy? And often I think, as we get to our age, often we just don't have the energy to, because it can be almost become violent, maybe metaphorically. So where do we find the energy to engage? Because I think that's, again, we've talked about that before, that we have agency, but do we have the energy to engage? Because often when we get that harsh pushback, we just go, oh, you know, I just want to seek serenity. I want this to be dealt with justly, but man, this is costing me a lot. So I can see that often the new learning or the engaging in it has a cost to it in a way. And I don't know, can we afford that cost? You know, globally it's probably important to, but personally and locally, it may just add so much tension and stress that we can't handle it. So,
well, when I did my PhD thesis, not to crow about that or anything, I worked on a theologian who was a Catholic priest who was trying to understand what the hell happened in Germany, especially with the passivity of the Catholic Church. There were resistant movements, yes, but by and large, people were, and this is the word that rings in my head strong now, morally passive. And are we becoming morally passive and to the loss of freedom around the world with the rise of various forms of fascism? And so do we have the luxury of being tired and seeking serenity in the face of it? At the same time, we're institutionally disengaged, at least I am, such that you don't have a platform for that kind of engagement anymore. We're kind of retirees adrift, without the communities, in my case, that I used to have.
So
it's an irresolvable tension between engagement and seeking serenity.
Yeah.
And plus, we may be becoming, as we get older, less tolerant for complexity, because that's hard work to figure things out. So easy answers and platitudes come to the fore often.
I think that's us speaking from our privileged life.
Yes.
In fact, that kind of disturbs me even more, because I think to myself, this is not about us. It is about justice. It is about giving voice to the voiceless. It is about, standing up to a social platform which is going to be an allyship or it's going to be action, whatever. So I think that, you know, my learning is more for me to get on board with what is necessary for us to be good human beings. So in some ways, I'm always looking for something new to learn about the world around me. I'm constantly trying to find a place where I can hear the stories of the voiceless, or I can be engaged in political, it can be political dialogue or whatever, you know. But I also think that, you know, we can't sit on our laurels going out in life. We actually have to be continually engaged in the society that we have been living in for as long as we have. And so for me, there is no other choice.
Amen.
Yeah. The question for me becomes how, again, and we've explored that before, how do you do that?
Yeah.
How do you find that way to be a voice in there and affect some kind of change? Or not even change, but to add your voice to those that are there. It's, I feel quite cut off from avenues to do that in many ways. I think protests are good. There are, you can write letters, but there, unless we actively change our lifestyle, move somewhere where there is ongoing tensions and you start to be part of the fight, the actual fight, I agree. I think we live very protected lives, and we live lives that are not really threatened in the big
comfortable
picture.
Lives.
It's very comfortable. And so that kind of involvement in the issues of the world, to me, involves discomfort and taking yourself somewhere where you are in danger or you are...
But it also means reading, keeping up with the news, going beyond what people call the fake news, right? Those things that are promoting a specific kind of thinking or understanding. You almost always have to look for alternate kind of places to engage, right? And engagement isn't just action. Engagement is actually being willing to learn something new about something.
And that, I guess that's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
You know, what are the avenues apart from... Mm-hmm. Going to the place and being part of the actual, like going to the Ukraine and
or listening to their stories or supporting them where they're at.
Well, maybe that's part of the challenge of learning when you're older, is learning where are the avenues, because, you know, we don't have the same establishment connections that we used to have, but the opportunities are there. I think it's just a matter of how do we explore them, and what kind of, again, energy does that take?
Making choices about energy too, right? Yeah.
And then there's back to the idea, there's always the certain level where we have comfort zones and security that we live in. And it's distressing to move out of that.
Very that's stressful. My point, yeah. I think.
Yeah, and I mean, when Jack goes about that the historian, the theologian about the 1930s German church, that was exactly it. I think for many of them, they felt almost like, well, you know, I've got enough trouble for today. I don't need to bring more trouble on myself. So I'm just going to kind of put my head down and passively go along. And maybe the naive hope that it will just pass peacefully.
It's not as bad as it's said.
Yeah, it's not as bad as it looks, right? When in fact, that was not the case.
So. Or, you know, since I'm a religious studies scholar, or things will be fine. Yeah. It's all in the hands of God.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which is a theological legitimizing of passivity.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, in some ways, that's exactly.
Rather than the prophetic voice in Christianity. And I remember a professor in seminary telling me, you never want to be a prophet. Uh-huh. Look at what happened to them. Right?
Wow.
So don't get prophetic from the pulpit.
Yeah, well.
Was the under, you know, mm-hmm. was he, is what he was saying.
Yeah.
But so it's so subtle between that posturing and becoming prophetic and detachment.
Yeah.
It's hard to find middle ground.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I think that's exactly what we're struggling with. What is that, go back to that gray area we were talking about, when you don't agree with this or agree with that and you find yourself in the gray area.
Yeah.
What is that? Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
What does that look like?
What does it look like? And how do you navigate that?
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's the term I think is moral ambiguity rather than moral passivity. Sometimes we take the ambiguity and struggle with it and find this is kind of too hard. So then we move back into passivity again. Yeah. Like, oh my gosh, this is just too hard.
Well, actually, that sounds kind of strange now as you're saying that, because remember what in that quote that I was saying, it said, what's to stop us from enhancing the quality of our lives by achieving greater awareness, mm-hmm. right? mean,
that you know, greater awareness can be a real problem.
It can be a problem, right? Yeah. But what is it that we're being called to do in terms of our aging process, right? Are we to just, you know, sit in our homes and read a book and quietly just sort of vegetate and stagnate? Or are we to be engaging in whatever the narratives are going on out there and making sure that we're well informed and we are truth tellers? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Those are kind of things for me that seem to be important at this age.
Yeah. Truth tellers is a... that resonates with me, because I think it's easy to not say your truth in the face of somebody else saying things that you completely disagree with.
Yeah.
And that it's that constant battle of, okay, is this someone you can pick that battle with or
yes,
not?
Yeah.
Is it somebody who you can have the conversation with or not? Are they so entrenched at this moment that there's no point? Or is there some opportunity here for a dialogue to learn from them as well as to have them learn from you? And that, I guess, is the thing that I seek. When we lived in Kitchener, they used to have this thing called third age learning opportunities where they'd hold, people would come in and talk and you could go to the lecture and then you could meet people with that were like-minded, and we went to a few, and it was interesting the topics that you could submit your ideas for topics, and it was very interesting the topics that they had, and it was a lot of food for thought sometimes.
And was the point then that you would have dialogue so that you could come to a sense of understanding, you had some common ground?
No, the point was to learn.
Yeah,
basically,
to learn.
It was just to learn. In fact, we had the principal flautist from the Kitchener Symphony Orchestra. He came and talked. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was things like, it was fun things, too.
Yeah.
He was really interesting.
See, I like that idea. I wish there was something.
There must be
something around us here that we engage. Like, I think,
well, the bookstore tries to do it, right? In the evenings.
Yeah, the McNally Robinson.
These were designed for seniors. It was the early afternoon. You could come. You could have coffee after. You could talk to whoever, and you could go home.
Yeah.
That's very suitable to seniors. But it was, they were very... it was very interesting. Once the head of the Kitchener Library came and talked about all the things that they were trying to do that were beyond what we normally think of what a library is. I love libraries. Mm-hmm. I just love libraries. And
their programming.
And their how they view their role and how that changes. And we might be a little sidetracked from the conversation, but learning, it's different. It's different now that I'm older. It's not go to a class and learn and study and take a test. It's not that anymore at all.
Well, I was just going to say, I always wanted to go back and take, courses at university that I didn't have, you know, for interest's sake or whatever. And now I'm finding the thought of using up a lot of energy to go to university courses is too much, but something more informal. But anyway, you were going to...
I had applied to do I was going to do a kinesiology degree when we moved to Kitchener. But that's when you got really sick. It just became insurmountable in terms of the hurdles to try to to try to do it. But it was something that at the time would have been interesting to do. Although I don't know that I could have managed the grading system anymore, mm-hmm. like having to study for exams. And
the motivation to do.
I mean, it was partly me too. So it was. I don't know if I have the energy for this. So, but it truly. I think there are programs where seniors can take classes for audit them mm-hmm. for free, mm-hmm. and that's an option too.
I wonder if some of the issue, though, when we have this more freedom of time, theoretically, is that we see all these options out there and then become overwhelmed by the opportunities and the options,
that's true.
Or even the issues, Jack. You mentioned a couple earlier, and there may be others, and you realize you cannot deal with a dozen issues at once. It's humanly impossible. The example I think of in my parish in Thunder Bay, we wanted to start a social justice committee working group and gathered a number of interesting people together. And when we found out what they were all interested in, it was all these different areas of like, well, how do we even coalesce that? And so we didn't get very far because many people were so passionate about their area. Well, I want to do this and only this. Anyways, what I'm trying to say is there were so many options. It's like it became non-functional. I wonder if sometimes when we start to look at these different opportunities, we go, oh, I don't know, there's this and there's this and there's this. And in the end,
you end up not doing anything.
Not doing anything.
So
one of the points that runs into my head is, well, I wonder if we need to then be able to, as part of our learning, identify where our identity and passion is, and not to make it a rigid thing, but to realize this is where we should be moved to sort of learn or expand or engage. Or does that become too limiting then? Just as a question.
Good question.
Mm-hmm.
Good question.
Yeah.
I mean, there are any number of topics that I'm interested in that mm-hmm. I could pursue more in depth, mm-hmm. for sure. And I always perk up when I see things about those topics and interested in them.
Mm-hmm.
But do I pursue it? Not particularly.
Yeah.
Not as rigidly as I used to when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So learning, how do we learn, and what becomes a priority in learning?
Yeah,
I guess is.
Yeah, well, I'm going to pick on you, Jack, for a minute. For example, you're very passionate about the Oilers. Do you need to find a local Oilers fan club here? Is that and does that feel really expanding or energizing?
I might.
Or start one. I do know of two others that are Oilers fans that could be.
How could you not be an Oilers fan?
See, you know, and I mean, maybe that sounds trivial, but I just use that as an example that, where are we at? But then if you get so engaged in that, are you just tied into a little closed echo chamber where you really, in a way, don't expand or grow? And maybe again,
like becoming a Jet fan.
That's right. Yeah. Hey,
or starting a podcast.
I tried to become a Jet fan.
Yeah.
Actually, starting a podcast is being proactive. I think.
Yeah.
So too. Exactly.
Yeah.
So we need to pat ourselves on the back for engaged doing this.
Well, I think the other piece goes back to Rick's question about how do we do that, right? Well, we didn't go the usual route of, writing a book or, what I mean? Like the typical thing would have been, let's write a book or let's have a presentation at a gathering place at a bookstore or whatever. You know, we said, well, what about a podcast, right? Mm-hmm. We know nothing about running a podcast.
Wasn't that a lot of fun?
And wasn't that a lot of fun?
The technology.
But you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think it's good to do learning, but you also have to think about what is it you're going to learn that's different than what you've been used to in your sort of pattern of learning, right? I mean, I'm thinking about clearing out my bookshelf, right? And so I took photos of my books and sent them to a friend and said, if any of these interest you, please come and pick them up or whatever. And I started to think, I don't read a lot of books anymore. You know, I'm getting so that I'm tactile. I'm not into the tactile learning as much as I used to be, right? Mm-hmm. So again, that's a new way of learning, right?
It's so reading from an e-reader
Reading from an e-reader, yeah. Right?
Or like you haven't stopped reading books. It's just that you stopped handling books.
Right, or gone to magazines with short articles too. I will say that I'm buying into that a little
attention
bit more.
Attention span, yeah.
Yeah, it's part of the attention span. Or I guess maybe for me it's been, how do I measure the amount of energy that I have to do certain things every single day? Every day I wake up and I say to myself, how much can I manage in terms of my energy today, and decide what are the priorities for that day, you know? So that's how I learn, right? And so, yeah, magazines.
Yeah. So self-care, self-growth, that, I mean, it sounds all selfish, but it's not necessarily there. It's all of those things tie in, right?
Yeah.
You need to, you know, what's important, what's not important. I remember years ago hearing a senior talk, give some kind of presentation, and she was saying, as I got older, I couldn't raise my arms higher, so I couldn't reach the top shelf of my kitchen cupboards. And then after a while, it dawned on me, I don't think I really need all those things that were up on that top shelf of the kitchen cupboard. So, you know, kind of adjusting the mindset too, and some of that means being adaptable, no?
Right.
Just a thought.
What I lost sleep over last night, I was thinking about my thesis, right?
Yeah.
And this whole issue of this Catholic priest trying to reconcile with himself how it is that his family, for example, never spoke about the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. When they could see one of the smokestacks from the extermination camps.
Wow.
And it just plagued him his whole life. So one of the things he drew on was Hannah Arendt's analysis of the banality of evil.
Mm-hmm.
That is, evil is not perpetuated by zealots or sadists, but by ordinary people who cease to think critically and they abdicate moral responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking, in our old age, senior years, is it easier for us to abdicate moral responsibility in the face of what we know is going on in the world? Not that we're any, well, we may be wiser than other people, but other people are informed as well.
Mm-hmm.
But being informed doesn't engage moral responsibility necessarily.
I think the other piece of that is that we probably know that our generation has done some great...
When it comes to climate change,
done some great damage to the world, but we don't want to face that, right? We don't want to take responsibility for that. No. Our age demographic, right? And so is that also part of the learning process too, right?
Taking on that grievance
or
that grief that comes with knowing that we were contributors to the demise of the natural world through climate change, for example, or a host of other ways.
Yeah.
I mean, the issue of reconciliation, for example, the number of people who say, well,
I
wasn't there, I wasn't involved, that's not my issue. And you go, well, but as part of who we are as Canadians, it is our issue. But we tend to want to deny it because it involves a lot of, I think, deep soul searching.
Hard work.
It involves acknowledging that we are on territorial lands.
We're tired.
And whole cultures, our whole culture has been built on land that is taken from someone
taken
else.
Taken from somebody. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, one of the thoughts that keeps crossing my mind, years ago at a study conference, heard a theologian, and I'm sorry, I cannot remember the person's name, but one thing that always stuck with me is he said There's the world as it should be and the world as it is.
Yes.
And he says there's a gap between the two. So and there's the ideal and there's the reality we live in. And he says the problem is, or if I interpret remember correctly, is that often the world as it should be is so, and the world as it is are so far out of sync that we fall into despair and we fall into a sense of hopelessness and we lose sight of the world as it should be, the ideal. So for example, you know, we have a Charter of Human Rights. Well, you look at it and you look where it's being violated and you kind of go, huh, you know, the comment is, oh yeah, you know, whatever, you know, there'll always be crime, there'll always be the poor with us, you know, that's the reality. So we're not, so there's no point in engaging, no point in having any motivation. And then you feel tired. And that's why, again, I think that the world as it should be, the ideal, should always be in front of us as something to aspire to and something to motivate us, rather than just look at the world as it is and become, like you said before, Jack, morally passive. And I think that's critical. That's something that always has motivated me, especially in my more cynical moments, which happen almost every day.
So learning isn't just about making choices, it's about being motivated.
Yeah,
in some ways
and,
too, right?
And how are what is it that motivates us?
Us
so sometimes
yeah.
there's some soul searching there, like what is the ideal? And maybe if the ideal is out of sync with, say, matters of empathy or care, or thinking beyond yourself, maybe that needs to be relearned too.
Yeah.
Well, and so empathy, that's interesting because we believe in empathy. Mm-hmm. And we at
we
around this table,
it, yes.
Well,
yes.
But we and we try to practice empathy around this table, but that's not true for
all places in the
all
world.
All places in the world, or all
right.
people in the world, and
yeah.
And how does that play into what we do? Because mm-hmm. that emotional investment into making sure the other is okay. Mm-hmm. It is kind of the crux of it in some ways, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The
mm-hmm.
that really caring about what happens to other people in the world.
And the, but yes, I agree. And empathy is absolutely important. But in the end, I don't know what.
Well,
I'm,
the question for me, if I'll just finish my thought there, is where does that leave us? In a world where sort of the moral compass is missing and mm-hmm. that ability to empathize, or even maybe they can, but they don't want to.
Yeah.
So the things that are happening based on those stances is in complete contrast to my feelings and how I would function. And
yeah.
it just makes it hard to know what to do.
Yeah. Hmm. I was thinking, I was telling one of my neighbors about an engagement I had with a person who has a different point of view than me. And after I described the situation and everything, and I said that I didn't feel that there would ever be a common ground there or whatever, and I was just going to let it go. And she says, but at any point in that conversation, did you have any empathy for her? Right? And I mean, it
yeah,
just
that,
hit me. And I thought, boy, that's a learning moment. Because I couldn't remember an empathetic moment as the conversation was going on. So now I have to think that through, right? And that was a strange learning for me.
But in a way, a positive one. It, opened your thought process in your mind to something that didn't consider.
Yes,
yeah.
right.
Yeah, and maybe something that needs to be considered. It needs to be explored. Anyway.
Right, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So
what does empathy look like in the face of somebody who you have a completely diametrically opposed viewpoint to? Like,
yeah.
It's interesting.
That's very interesting, but I think it goes back to, again, the idea that we are all human beings. We all make mistakes. It's a messy life. Mm-hmm. We just have to figure out how to remember that they are human. They are a human being, a valued human being, right? That, I think that's
a good starting point.
Starting point for me, just to keep reminding myself of that.
And just a thought, empathy doesn't necessarily mean acceptance of what that other person is espousing.
Right
on.
No, it does not.
I think we have to be clear on that.
Mm-hmm. No, it does not. And it doesn't mean bleeding heart and, you know, being the whole...
No, yeah.
No, not at all. To me, it means being able to put yourself in their shoes in some ways and understand what they are also dealing with, struggling with.
Yeah.
And it is, our humanity binds us.
And maybe that helps open the dialogue. Then, rather than closing it off.
Maybe. You
know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was reading about elderhood in the Native American traditions.
Okay.
And one thing that caught my attention was how it is that elders learn to hold, especially with the residential school issue, to hold pain with dignity and resilience.
Mm.
And I was thinking, oh, man. But the pain, sometimes we're completely overwhelmed by pain because of the awareness of the injustices that are being perpetrated in an ongoing way. So, and also as elders, we are keepers of stories. That's what the elderhood in Native traditions is, keeper of stories. But also, can we be, and this phrase stuck in my mind, guardians of conscience? In other words, remind ourselves and others about this being wrong and taking a stand. Though it may cost us.
But everything in life costs us, right?
Well, by cost, I mean put in jail.
Oh, yeah, I guess I don't know if that's all the cost, but death is, right? I mean, so I'm saying, Jack, I think that all of our life, it's at a cost, right? It's going to cost us.
Right.
If it's not going to cost us in death, it's going to cost us in dignity. It's going to cost us in
pain.
It's going to cost
relationships.
Sometimes. Yeah.
It's a tension, though, with us being, and this is me speaking now for myself, feeling far more vulnerable than any other time in my life.
Okay.
And therefore taking a stance that costs.
Yeah.
I need to think about that first as to who it affects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if I stand on the street corner like a preacher and talk about climate collapse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, there's cost to that.
But I think that goes back to that original introduction when I was talking earlier about the fact that is there somewhere on the continuum that allows us to live with the losses and the challenges, the joys and enrichments, and live through this period of moral conscience, right? You know, that it helps us balance between that energetic, hopeful life and that overwhelming despair life, right?
How do you find the middle ground?
Yeah, but we have a continuum. I guess maybe that's the piece I'm saying about our learning. It's a continuum. It's not necessarily a spot that's stagnant or status quo or whatever. We've got a continuum to keep learning and to keep...
And sometimes it's a rapid learning, and sometimes it's slower learning, and sometimes it's painful learning, and sometimes it's joyful learning, and I like that idea of a continuum, because it's like the pain continuum.
Sometimes it's hard, and sometimes it's not quite as bad.
Not quite as bad, and not as hard to walk through that pain.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, emotional pain or physical pain or moral pain. But the point is to keep, I guess for me, the point is to just keep working at that.
Keep engaging.
Keep walking through it and keep struggling with trying to find what has the meaning for me in terms of learning and growing and becoming a better I don't know what better person means, but just become somebody that I am proud to be, I guess. That's,
yeah,
maybe.
I think that's where we can kind of leave it today. And we hope that those listening have some thoughts about that as well. Please feel free to send your messages through on the podcast comment section or through our email that's on our podcast there too as well. So thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for joining us today. You can find us under Seniors in the Building on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, RRS Feed Community, and possibly wherever you listen to other podcasts. We'd like to thank Thomas Waschenfelder for our logo design. As well, thanks to Amy Waschenfelder and collaborator Natasha Franzblow for our musical jingle for the podcast. We really appreciate their input, and we appreciate the support of all of our families in this endeavor for listening, for reviews, for tech support, and love. Our email is forseniorsinthebuilding@gmail.com. That's the numeral 4, followed by seniorsinthebuilding, lowercase, all one word. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, stay curious and hopeful.